And good Tuesday morning, live from the downtown area of Coffeyville. That's where we find our KGGF studios again here on this Tuesday morning. I'm Sam Spank, glad you're with us. Many times throughout the year, we're joined by the Kansas Attorney General, Derek Schmidt, as we are today here on this morning. As again, over the phones, we do have the Attorney General. Derek, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Good morning, Sam.
Great to have you here. Always, whether it's over the phones, in studio, or either, we always appreciate you taking some time, giving us the latest news out of your guys' office as well. But real quick, haven't spoken to you since. How was the 4th of July there for you, Attorney General Schmidt?
You know, we had a great time on the 4th of July. For the first time in, I think, 10 years, I was not in Kansas for the 4th, which is very strange, but we took the kids and Jennifer and I took our kids and went to Washington. We realized they hadn't been to our nation's capital since they were little bitty. Didn't really remember. And so we went out and celebrated the 4th on the National Mall and had a great time.
Absolutely. So were you guys out there actually for the 4th and that big production fireworks show that they had?
You know, we were. We went out. Our plan was just to camp out on the Mall. I don't mean literally camp, but, you know, throw out a blanket and just be part of the crowd. And then, of course, you know, the president wound up speaking from the Lincoln Memorial, and so we wound up going to that. So we had a good stroke of luck and a terrific opportunity.
Well, that is great. And what a cool opportunity. I've been able to travel myself, but haven't been able to over to the Capitol. So that's definitely an experience I'd like to get to. So I'm glad you guys had a good Independence Day as well. Good last couple of weeks here as we find ourselves in the middle of summer, but still some things with their feet underneath them. I got a couple of press releases that I'd like to ask you about coming out of your office here. And I think a good place to start is really kind of scheduling 3 Kansas cases for the United States Supreme Court. If you'd like to maybe break them down just a little bit, each case and kind of and the reasonings why they're heading to the Supreme Court.
Well, sure. You know, one of the special privileges of serving in the Attorney General's office, we get to handle the state's appellate litigation, and we handle all of the state's appellate litigation when it's in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. No Kansas case involving the state or its employees or agencies reaches the U.S. Supreme Court without us being right in the middle of it. And so, you know, SCOTUS litigation, Supreme Court litigation, is sort of a unique sort of advocacy. Last time we were there was in 2015 when we were successful in arguing the Carbrothers case out of Wichita, that terrible homicide case. And this fall we have 3 cases up at once. We think it's maybe the first time in Kansas history the state has had 3 cases in front of the high court at one time. We know it's the first time in modern history. It's possible back in the 19th century it happened, but we can't find it in any of the more recent records. So it's a heavy load. Doesn't sound like a lot, but 3 is a big number when you're talking about Supreme Court advocacy. So we'll be out there much of the fall working on this. The 3 cases are, coincidentally, all out of the northeast part of the state. Just happened to work out that way. We have one which is a homicide case. A fellow killed 4 people, members of his family, in Osage County. He was convicted. He doesn't dispute at this point that he did it. The issue is he argues that he was legally insane, and that the way the Kansas law on insanity is structured, he argues, violates the Constitution. Essentially, Kansas back in the 90s, for reasons that aren't entirely clear to us, even though we've done the research, became one of about half a dozen states that abolished the insanity defense as a freestanding defense. Now, our view is that it's still possible to put on your evidence of insanity and avoid criminal liability through a different provision in the law, but that's what the argument's about, whether the way Kansas has structured that law violates the federal Constitution. So that's number one. We didn't appeal that, by the way. We won in the Kansas Supreme Court. The conviction and his death sentence were affirmed, but the defendant has appealed, and the U.S. Supreme Court's agreed to hear it.
Gotcha.
The second case, that case will be argued the first week in October. The second case will be argued the second week in October. It's a case out of Johnson County. It's an interesting little case. The bottom line issue is preemption, whether federal law enacted by Congress has preempted state law enacted by our legislature in a certain area. But the framing is sort of interesting. It's a group of cases, 3 different cases consolidated, where individuals who did not have Social Security numbers, probably because they were in the country illegally, but that's not a fact in the record. In any event, they didn't have Social Security numbers. They went out in the black market and bought Social Security numbers, which, of course, is illegal. Now you've committed identity theft. There are real victims. These were other people's Social Security numbers. And they used these numbers to go get jobs and then to pay taxes, which, to their credit, is the right thing to do. The problem they ran into when they filed their Kansas taxes, they filed them under a false Social Security number. So they were caught. state prosecuted them for identity theft. They were convicted. Their convictions were affirmed by the Court of Appeals. And then the Kansas Supreme Court, much to our surprise, narrowly reversed those convictions and said that the reason that we couldn't prosecute them for that is that there's a provision in the federal immigration statute that says that information that you write on your Form I-9 that we all fill out before employment may not be used for any other purpose. And in this case, our court reasoned because these folks had used their false Social Security number first on their I-9, which we did not prosecute them for, but later on their state tax forms, which we did prosecute them for, we were nonetheless preempted because that was information on the I-9 that couldn't be used. We don't think that's correct, but our court did, so we're appealing, and we'll argue that in October. And then the third case is sort of a smaller stakes case. It's out of Lawrence. It's a traffic stop case. It's an interesting Fourth Amendment case. Essentially, an officer ran a license plate of a car he spotted on the street. Vehicle came back registered to an individual whose license was revoked, and the officer stopped the car. Turns out the guy was driving the car, and so he was cited and convicted for driving while suspended. He appealed, and his argument was the traffic stop was illegal because the officer didn't have reasonable suspicion to pull him over. Because even though the officer knew that the vehicle was registered to a person, didn't know that that person was driving the vehicle. Our court agreed with that and suppressed the stop, and ultimately the convictions were reversed. We don't think that's the correct interpretation of the Fourth Amendment, but of course that's not for us to decide. It's for the U.S. Supreme Court. So pretty interesting cases headed up this fall, and it'll keep us plenty busy.
Absolutely. Well, I kind of just wanted to go back and backtrack a little bit, just kind of off of your thoughts with the policy. You had mentioned just only a handful of states are with Kansas on that plea of insanity there. What are your thoughts, and do you think it needs to be changed?
Well, I think that obviously our position would be stronger if the legislature in the 1990s had not done that. We're trying to figure out, like I say, why they did. We think what was going on was that, even though this was a little over a decade later, that this was part of a national reaction in legislatures, a few legislatures, to John Hinckley's attempt to assassinate President Reagan back in the early 1980s. And, of course, Mr. Hinckley pled insanity and ultimately availed himself of the insanity defense and wound up spending a lot of time in mental health confinement as opposed to a prison. And there was some frustration with that in the country, and a handful of legislatures, our own included, adopt this alternate approach to the insanity defense. You know, it's a policy choice what the legislature wants to do, unless and until the Supreme Court says what they've done is unconstitutional, in which case they don't have much of a choice. I suppose in hindsight I do wish they hadn't gone down this road, because it would make the case much simpler right now, but they did, and so we'll defend the law the way it's written. And we think it is defensible, but it's a difficult case.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, very, very busy there in the first couple of weeks of October as well, just all through the fall in terms of, you had mentioned, is it the probably the first time in the recent history, or at least documentable, that three cases are heading to the U.S. Supreme Court? Is that what you mentioned?
Yeah, that's right. It's very unusual for any one state to have three cases up at once. And it's particularly unusual for a small state like Kansas. We don't think it's happened for Kansas before. It's just a coincidence. We happen to have three issues presented that the court found of interest and worthy, and they agreed to hear them. But, you know, the U.S. Supreme Court only agrees to hear about 1% of all the cases it's asked to decide. So to have three up at once is it really does beat the odds.
Absolutely. Well, let's, again, speaking with Kansas Attorney General here this morning, Derek Schmidt, over the phones on the Mighty 690 KGGF. Let's kind of shift our focus over here to now something that has been settled. I believe it was last week or so, but in today's day and age, it seems like more and more companies are either being breached or they don't allow themselves to have the correct type security when they have such important information for individuals. But I know you guys finally settled a lawsuit with Primera. Kind of explain your process on that.
Well, right. Primera is a health insurance provider, predominantly in the Pacific Northwest, but it does have a number of customers in Kansas. Not a large number, but some number. Primera, of course, maintains lots of personal data, health insurance data, private medical data, private financial data, data protected by HIPAA, the federal health privacy law. And Primera had been warned several times that their data security systems were not adequate, that they were vulnerable to being hacked, They didn't respond to that by upgrading their systems, and lo and behold, after some time, they were in fact hacked. And a lot of people's personal information was exposed to whoever these hackers are. We don't actually know who the hackers were. So we joined with a group of other states and brought a civil lawsuit against Primera. The feds are trying to find the hackers. Of course, they're the real bad guys in this, but Primera also doesn't have clean hands because they were told that you're making people's information vulnerable, and they didn't do anything about it. Mm. In fact, after the hack, they actually made the affirmative statement to some of their customers that none of their information had been breached, which was false. It had. So we finally reached a civil settlement with Primera. They've agreed to, in fact, upgrade their data security practices and report back to the states on what's been done so that we can make sure they do it. They're paying about a $10 million penalty nationwide. The Kansas share of that's about $50,000, which will go into the general fund. About 19,000 Kansans were affected. About 19,000 of us here in Kansas had personal information exposed because of this hack that was allowed to happen because Primera didn't meet their duty to protect that information. So,
absolutely.
We see more and more of these data breach cases, and we deal with them one at a time.
Yeah, well, and the way it sounds as well, is the most of that $10 million penalty or the $56,000 here coming to Kansas, is that because of the neglect, or is that due to lost finances from others and information?
Nope, that's due to the neglect. There is a separate private class action lawsuit brought on behalf of the individuals who were harmed, whose data was breached.
Okay.
That seeks to get some compensation for them. We didn't deal with consumer compensation because that's being dealt with in a separate lawsuit. So we just dealt with the company having breached its duty under Kansas law to protect the private information of Kansans when it holds that information.
Absolutely. Well, now I'm sure held up to some sort of standards or accountability with that. Are they going to be set nationwide, or are they kind of specific from state to state? I'm, you know, sure, accountability and different securities, are they going to have to change that nationwide?
Yeah, in this case, this company will, I believe, choose to adopt nationwide standards because it's so much easier for a company that operates in multiple states to have one set of standards. You know, one of the big policy issues of our time is what standards ought to be in place that holders of personal information must meet in order to have satisfied their duty to protect that information. And right now, there is no national standard. Instead, every state has its own standards. And I understand why that's very frustrating to many larger companies that operate in multiple states. But that's an issue that has to be worked out by Congress and state legislatures going forward. Right now, we've got to enforce the law the way it's written, and that's what we're doing.
Gotcha. Well, again, that was last week. Speaking of last week as well, I know you had some thoughts on the withdrawal from the food assistance policy as well from our governor.
Yeah, this is another example of we enforce the law the way it's written. This is an issue where, with respect to federal food assistance programs, SNAP benefits, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program benefits, formerly called food stamps, federal law since the mid-1990s had said that for a narrow group of recipients of food benefits, they call them ABODs, able-bodied adults without dependents. Basically, people who are able-bodied, they're not disabled, they're able to work, they don't have kids or other dependents, and the federal law says that if you're in that category, you're able to work and nobody else is depending upon you for their income and livelihood and support, then you must work or be participating. If you can't work because you can't get a job or whatever, you have to be participating in a federal work program or otherwise for at least 3 months. You may only receive food benefits for up to 3 months out of every 36-month period if you are not working. Let me say the same thing the other way around. That's the federal law. But there are a couple of exceptions that are discretionary in federal law where states may extend those benefits to people who could be working but are not working for a longer period of time. The Kansas legislature, back in, I think it was 2015, enacted a statute, wrote it into the books in Kansas that says Kansas will not exercise that discretion. In other words, we're going to adopt a firm, bright line in Kansas of can't get food benefits for more than 3 months out of any 36-month period if you're able to work, unless you are in fact working. Now, if you're working and not earning enough, you can still get benefits, but you have to be working. That's the public policy and the law in the state of Kansas.
Absolutely.
Sort of to our surprise, Governor Kelly announced back in May that her administration was nonetheless going to exercise discretion under the federal law and extend benefits for that group of individuals for an additional 3 months. You know, we looked at that, and it was brought to our attention by some folks in the legislature who had worked on that Kansas law. And from our vantage point, it was pretty clear. I mean, if folks don't like the Kansas policy, they're free to go ask the legislature to change it. But the governor is not free to simply ignore Kansas law. And Kansas law says we may not exercise that discretion to extend the period of benefits, period. So we simply told the governor, you can't do that, and if you go ahead and do it, we're going to file a lawsuit and ask a court to tell us whether we're correct that you can't do it or whether you're correct that you found a loophole that allows you to do it. And I was very pleased that the governor decided not to proceed down that path. After we brought it to her attention, she reversed course and decided to follow Kansas law.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and after, you know, just for a brief example with the education, after 7 trips up and down to the Supreme Court, I know that wasn't necessarily there, but it's good to finally find some resolution efficiently and quickly, and now moving, you know, a little bit past litigation with that. So again, speaking with Kansas Attorney General Derek Schmidt here this morning on this Tuesday. Derek, I really appreciate you taking some time with us and speaking to our listeners out there, and I say we just check in with you in about a month or so.
That sounds great. Thanks a lot, Sam. Take care.
Thanks so much. This is the Mighty 690 KGGF.